Hey, today it's another first. It's another first this week because this is the first time in 38 weeks, 38 episodes that I've pressed record knowing exactly what I'm going to call this episode. I knew instantly that this episode is going to be called Scumbag Men. Now, you might be thinking, all right, you knew what you were going to call this episode before you started recording. Like, so what? Why should I care? Hand on heart, you shouldn't care. That is arguably the least impressive thing I've shared with you throughout the last 38 weeks. But let me tell you something before you start judging me, all right? Let me tell you this. When you've been turning up for 38 weeks, doing the same shit, talking about the same shit, I guarantee you cannot underestimate how much I just start looking for firsts, right? I just have to start looking for firsts. I'm looking for novelty. I'm looking for anything to talk about that isn't my desire to wear a corset, basically, all right? That's a reference to last week's episode, by the way. Many of you probably got it. Most of you maybe didn't, but yeah. Doesn't matter. So this is the first episode that I knew what I was going to call it. It is all about scumbag men, or at least 80% of today's episode will be about scumbag men. And I want to play a little clip for you. Let me get my speakers. Right, okay. I want to play a little clip from an episode of Louis Theroux that I watched last night. This is called Louis Theroux, A Place for Pedophiles. Clearly not the most lighthearted of investigations. It might not be for everyone, but he visits a center in the States which holds convicted sex offenders and pedophiles after they've served their sentence. They go to this place and they are ultimately... It's a place to further rehabilitate them rather than putting them straight back into the community. So there's this guy who's talking to the center's psychologist, and the center psychologist is a woman called Dr. D'Orazio. And during this exchange, it gets a little bit heated because this guy, for some reason, feels that she's been probing too deep into his history and his psychology, and he doesn't appreciate it. And this is ultimately what happens.
Let me point out what you're doing right now. I'm trying to offer you some constructive feedback, and your defenses are getting up, and you're starting to finger point.
I haven't even started to finger point, so don't go over there. I think we better leave it alone. Let my clinicians deal with it. This is not my clinician.
What he just said there is, I want my clinician to deal with this. You are not my clinician.
What could make you maybe feel better with interacting with myself and the BBC in this piece right now?
Well, I don't understand why I'm interacting with you at all. I don't understand why you're here.
He just said, I don't know why I'm interacting with you at all. I don't know why you're here.
Maybe somebody could tell me.
Why, Dr. D'Orazio, is he
It's an interview with me and the BBC. You know, if you want to be there for background, okay, I guess that makes sense. But why are you asking me questions at all?
He just said to Dr. D'Orazio, why are you asking me any questions at all?
So you'd feel more comfortable if no provider was here, that you could have your time with the BBC on your own?
At this point, yes.
Yeah. Why is that?
But it's mainly you that I don't want here right now.
And he just said, it's mainly you that I don't want here right now. So what happens later on in this 1 hour documentary? He has a 360 and he wants to apologize to her, right? Now, there's something that she says in the face of his apology, which on face value seems like she's been very understanding and very forgiving. But if you're into psychology and sentence analysis like me, and you're some kind of pretend psychologist again like me, I'm convinced that if you do dissect her response, she ultimately shits in his beer, right? She's not interested in his apology, and she, for all intents and purposes, shits in his beer. And I'm going to play what she said. I'm curious to see whether I'm right or whether I'm overthinking it. So that's today's episode. By the way, shits in his beer is my way of saying rejects his apology. I don't know if anybody has ever characterized the rejection of an apology as shitting in someone's beer before. I would argue probably not, and I'm not entirely sure where I got it from, but I liked it. It seemed poetic. So we're going to play that later in the episode. Also, this week, I'll be sharing some more feedback of a... I don't like the term negative feedback. I think I've told you that before. Someone has left another comment under my documentary, Waiting with a Killer Online, and the comment is, this person isn't a fan. I'll read that to you. Also, I have some news regarding my, how can I put it? Basically, me asking out anything with a pulse out on a date. So I'll share that with you as well this week. Now, you know, oh, by the way, how are you? I just never learn. I never learn any week. It's like straight in there, waving my balls around, not even asking how you are. I do hope I find you well. It's another one of those weeks, by the way, when I'm recording late at night. Guess what time it is? It is currently Thursday, the 8th of October. 25 minutes past 11 in the evening, and this will be coming out tomorrow, as it does every single week. Friday morning, the Worry About It Later podcast with me, CK Golding, and you hanging out with me every week, for which I'm grateful. Thank you for your ongoing messages, DMs, and just general love. It delights me, and I hope you've had a nice week. Mine's been relatively up and down, but we push through. Don't we? We push through. Now, you know how in recent weeks I've been doing a new feature called CK's Crummy Book. You know how it normally appears at the end of the podcast? Well, actually, it's more fitting for it to appear this week, right now.
CK's Crummy Book. It's like a journal, but shitter.
So CK's Crummy Book, for those of you that are new to the podcast, is my, it's a mixture of a diary and a journal. And it's a book that I write wisdoms and musings and gems. Whenever, you know, I watch a lot of content online, principally via YouTube, and whenever I encounter a sentence or a saying or just some wisdom that makes a lot of sense and connects me, I write it in my book, and I'm collating just a series of quotes that inspire, motivate, and galvanize me, I guess. And it's called CK's Crummy Book because it's been a couple of weeks since I've had an installment of CK's Crummy Book, but I really want to take a photo of this book and share it with you, but I think that kind of ruins the joy of podcasting. So I would rather you imagine the state it was in. But let me just give you an insight. Currently, I'm holding in my hand the front cover of the book, which is quite solid. This is the book on my knee. I'm currently wearing shorts. This is the sound the book cover makes on my knee. Right. So it's quite solid. It's like solid wood, not wood, like cardboard. And this is all I have in my hand because about 6 days ago, it just dropped off. Like, the book was crummy before I invented this feature, but now it's just utter dog shit. It's in about 3 bits. But it has a certain charm. There's a certain charm to it being crummy, and it lives up to its name. So the wisdom I want to share with you came from an episode of the Joe Rogan podcast. I actually wrote this in the book probably maybe 5 or 6 weeks ago, but it really resonated with me this week. So the quote from Joe Rogan, one of the world's biggest podcasters, comedian, and former Ultimate Fighter. Is it Ultimate? I don't know, whatever. So the quote is, doing difficult things makes you better at difficult things. There's a certain poetry in the simplicity of that. I adore it. Doing difficult things makes you better at difficult things. Now, the reason that really resonated with me is I'm not proud of this, but it is what it is. I'm a massive fan of easy shit. I love easy things. And anything that's difficult invariably doesn't attract me. So that's why that really resonated with me, because I think I've probably been living with the easy street too long, and I like that. Now, you'll also be aware that rejection is something I struggle with. I wish I remembered which episode it was when I told you about my ongoing battle with my fear of rejection. I really wish I'd have looked what episode number it was, but it doesn't matter. I do have an ongoing battle with rejection. I'm not a fan of it. And for some reason this week I realized, you know what, just push through it, dude. Just push through it. So you know that I love a 6-part audio drama called Fake Heiress. I spoke about it in a previous episode as well. And I received an email from the journalist and narrator of that series, because we were talking when we were arranging the interview on my website. And she forwarded me an email from her boss, if you like, her producer. And in the email from him was everything. It was like his email address, his telephone number, his mobile number. And I thought, like, you love this audio series so much, you were that taken by it, why don't you just ring his mobile number and, like, see if you can go down to BBC Studios and just hang out and see how you assemble an audio drama. That's literally the sequence of thoughts that went through my head. There's his mobile number. You loved the series. Just ring him. Fuck emailing him. Like, 99.7% of people would email him. 0.3% will call him. So be that 0.3 and stand out. Now, because I'm not a massive fan of rejection, I thought, nah, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of that idea. Then I thought, actually, I'm a massive fan of that idea, and that's exactly what I'm going to do. So I rang him up, right? And I think I called him about 2 weeks ago. So the conversation is a little hazy, but I'm going to try my best to remember how I opened the phone call, because I always like it to be a little bit novel. So ring, 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 ring. Hello. Sasha speaking. He's called Sasha. Hello, Sasha speaking. Hey, Sasha, it's CK. I recently interviewed... this is embarrassing. Holy shit. This wasn't part of the conversation, by the way. This is just me forgetting who the hell I interviewed. Oh, for fuck's sake. Do I really have to go onto my own website to remind myself who I interviewed? This is the worst. Oh, my God. Please don't be listening. Oh, no. Just came to me. She was called Vicky. Oh my God, social media has shredded my memory. That is so embarrassing. But guess what? I'm not going to edit it out. So let's start again. Ring, ring. Hello, Sasha speaking. Hey, Sasha, it's CK here. I recently interviewed Vicky on my website as we went through my love of Fake Heiress. I don't know. Hey, CK. Yeah, we've spoken on Twitter before. We have indeed. How are you? I'm fine, thanks. Just give me 1 second. I just need to close the door. Oh, yeah, sure. Sorry, I was going to ask. I've not interrupted anything, have I? Because you weren't obviously expecting my call. No, it's fine. Just give me a second. Yeah, how can I help you, CK? Right. The thing is, Sasha, I have some good news and I have some bad news. Which would you like first? Bad news? Okay, well, the bad news is I loved your 6-part audio drama so much, which, as we both know, was about a con artist who would just lie and deceive and do whatever she can to just put herself out there and get what she wants. I loved it that much that by osmosis, I've developed some of those traits, I'm afraid, mate. Then he started laughing and he went, okay, so what's the good news? And I said, well, the good news is I'm going to put them to some good use, and I'm going to put myself out there and tell you that I want to come and hang out with you at this BBC Studios and learn how you put an audio drama together. So then he started laughing. And he went, oh, right, okay, well, the trouble with that, CK, is we're in the middle of a pandemic and I haven't been into BBC Studios for the last 5 months. I'm currently sat in my pants in my... All right, he didn't say that bit. He didn't say the bit about pants, but he said, it's the middle of a pandemic. I've not been into BBC Centre for the last 6 months. I'm working exclusively from home. Then he started telling me about all this, like, fancy kit he's working on. So long story short, CK, no. But 100%, when we're out of this pandemic, come hang out. Of course you can, yeah, absolutely. So the beauty of this conversation is we ended up talking for about an hour. Because I remember looking at my phone afterwards, and I think it was just over an hour we were talking for, and I was, you know, it was just like a natural conversation, because I was telling him why I loved it, why it resonated with me. Then he reveals some nuggets that he's got coming up. He's working on a new documentary, which I suspect I'm not at liberty to disclose, but how can I put this? How can I put this delicately? I had a moderate hard-on for the documentary that he's currently working on, because I did a degree in business management, and one of the case studies that I learned about, it's one of the biggest brands on earth. You will have heard of it. You'd have probably owned something by them, and it's the origins of them, and the story is remarkable. So he was just telling me that's going to be the next thing to come out around Christmas, and it was a delight. So long story short, he said, when I'm back in BBC Centre CK, come down, hang out. Of course you can. So that was a delight. And I was, you know, I was keen to make that phone call, because my, I don't know if I'd say fear of rejection. I would just say my turbulent relationship with rejection is something that I understand I need to tackle head on, because as Joe Rogan says so articulately and eloquently, doing difficult things makes you better at doing difficult things. And because I had such a positive outcome from, you know, ringing him up, putting my balls on the table, telling him what I wanted, acknowledging that I'm in that 0.3% of people who would have done that, because I was acutely aware that not many people will do that. I was aware of that. You know, that's just common sense. We can all just assume that most people would go for the email. So I would argue I'm probably the first person to ring up with some good and bad news. So, you know, because I had such a positive outcome with that, I thought, okay, we'll just keep on. We'll keep on rolling. So that was incident one of two that I wanted to share with you. And if you have any interesting and equally ballsy requests, let me know. Let me hear it. Let's share our ballsy requests. Send me a tweet. Send me a Instagram hello, a DM, whatever. Let me know what you've done in the past, and you know, were you a little bit nervy and you did it anyway? Hit me up with that. And then the second thing, I think this was like 2 days ago, so it's Thursday now, so I think we're going back to Tuesday when I did this. As you know, and I'm not actually uncomfortable sharing this, because it's in the public domain. As you know, last week, I had a guest on the show, very, very fleeting chat with psychology graduate Rochelle from the States, who's now studying her master's. She's just cool. She's bright, articulate, eloquent, insightful, and just a cool human. So I said last week, like, I've got a bit of a crush on her mind. So we were talking on direct message this week, just about life and just general shit. And she's having a few difficulties, which I'm not obviously going to share now, but we were just talking through it. And it was, I've got such a low attention span. I was like, okay, cool. So we've had a nice chat. We've shared thoughts and insights and opinions. And what's the best way for me to end this conversation? How can I best end this conversation in an innovative, fun way that is not too dissimilar to my good and bad news opening with Sasha? So I thought, all right, cool. So the last thing I sent to her was, hang on, the last thing I sent to her was, we were having a disagreement over like the interpretation of certain words. And then the last thing I sent her was, yeah, whatever, semantics. Are you going to be my girlfriend or not? Just to give you context, that came out of nowhere, literally nowhere. Until that point, I'd never said anything of that ilk. So that was like someone just, I don't know, flicked her in the boob. I don't know, smacked her in the face. I just literally out of the, yeah, semantics. Are you going to be my girlfriend or not? Smiley face, have a great day. You deserve it. Because she was having a bit of a shit time, but she's only been nice to people, but it's not really hitting home. So I just wanted to let her know that she deserves a nice day. So which she replied, homie, I'm in a serious relationship. Now, this is my response to that, which we're going to dissect in a moment. I replied, I know. I enjoy pushing myself to say ludicrous things. I welcome you to not take them literally. You are cool, though. That is real. To which she replied, SMH. Now, I don't know if I'm old.
I don't know if I'm old. I went straight onto Google, typed in SMH, because I'm sick of fucking acronyms. I just, what are these acronyms? Do you know what SMH stands for? SMH stands for shaking my head. And I can't lie, that made me laugh. So anyway, that was the end of the exchange. I didn't send a reply to the SMH. And I was thinking, I'm all right with my left field comment and B with my follow up. And I don't think it annoyed her, because the next day I was tweeting about something completely disconnected. It had no reference to her or me or anything. I was just making a general tweet, to which she replied. And my argument is, if she thought I was some random dirty bastard, I would argue that she wouldn't have replied. So I'm just going to assume that she took it in the good spirit with which it was intended. But I'll tell you what, though. I'll tell you what. This Joe Rogan, he's not wrong. He's not wrong. Because I was reflecting on him saying doing difficult things makes you better at difficult things. And he's right. It was like, well, you know, what's the worst thing she's going to say? For all it's common knowledge that I think she's cool. And she has a hot mind and all that jazz. So I don't care. I have no concerns, but as we know from previous episodes, that's just not the usual me. But I thought, yeah, the usual me is boring me a little bit, to be honest with you. Do you ever get sick of the sight of yourself? do you ever just get, I mean, I've lived with me all my life and I'm a little bit sick of him. I'm a little bit sick of me, and I thought, I think it's because that, again, that audio drama that I rang Sasha about, it's based on a real life case of a 23-year-old moving from her home in Germany to New York, completely reinventing herself, albeit lying and deceiving everybody, but she completely reinvented herself. And I just find that so fascinating, stroke intoxicating, stroke compelling. Anyone can reinvent themselves at any time. So I don't always have to be afraid of rejection. I just don't have to be afraid of rejection. And you don't have to be whoever you are up until this point. And if you're sick of that person in the same way I'm sick of this person, just be the guy that you wish to be, actually. Which also was part of the reason that I decided I've started writing a book, because I've always admired people that write books. I've never thought I have the discipline to write a book, but then I thought, well, I would like to be the guy that could write a book. So that's exactly what I've started doing. I'm not going to talk about the book in this episode, or indeed many episodes. I don't want to be that guy that's literally banging about his book all the time, because I'm very mindful of how boring that will be. And I want there to be, you know what, I'll be honest with you, I want there to be some degree of excitement and anticipation. And I guarantee, if I'm talking about my book all the time when it comes to its release this time next year, you'll be like, oh, for fuck's sake. Mate, I will buy your book just so you'll shut up. So I'm not going to talk about it, really. At least I've told you now why you might be thinking in subsequent weeks he's not talking about his book much. That's the reason why, because you know what? Just because I'm living with it, I'm just not arrogant enough to think that you want to live with it as well. I will drop the occasional tidbit, but it's not going to be an ongoing thing. I'm just not that guy. So, yeah, I'm proud. I will tell you that the wheels came off a little bit. You know, last week when I announced the writing of the book, I'd written 5,000 words, just under 5,000 words in 5 days. Since last Friday, I'm just under 7,000 words. So it's been, the wheels have not come off. I don't want to say that, because I think us artists are far too quick to give ourselves a bad time, and the wheels haven't come off, but I have, yeah, I don't know. Maybe I just spent too much time reflecting and adjusting and tweaking and working out the sequencing of the book and editing it, which I've been led to believe isn't wise. You shouldn't edit. You should just let the creativity flow. And that seems to make a lot of sense to me, but I don't know. But again, I don't look at it as the wheels coming off, because I think us artists give ourselves a hard time, and everything, as you and I both know, is about perspective. I can sit here and say, you've only written 2,000 words in a week, or you can say you've written 7,000 words in 2 weeks. And how many artists would admit that you would always go for the first option? What is it with artists and humans generally that we always lean into the negative interpretation of fact? Why don't we go for the positive interpretation of fact, which is you've written, in theory, probably like a quarter of a book now. You've written 7,000 words in 2 weeks. You've written a quarter of a book. Why focusing on the fact that you've written half the number of words as you wrote the week before? And I'm getting better and better, and I'm becoming a bit of a shrewd operator in my perspective, to be honest. How are you with perspective? I don't know. I'm just becoming, I suppose, I remember when I used to be the world's biggest advocate of Twitter. Like when people first started banging on about how Twitter's such a negative place, I was just saying, what are you on about? Twitter's awesome. But I've got to admit, in the last couple of months, I have become aware that people only tweet shit. Like, people just love whining. And Twitter seems to be a hotbed for it. And I've become acutely aware of it recently. And it's tarnished my experience of Twitter somewhat. But that's a digression which isn't relevant. I simply wanted to let you know that I've taken two stabs in the dark recently, confronting my fear of rejection, and I'm proud of me. Are you proud of me? And if so, can you please send me some Snickers in the post? Because I don't want your pride. I don't want your happiness. I don't want you feeling proud of me. Just send me chocolate, and you and I will get on favourably. Let's have a look. What else have I got on here now? That reminds me. Right, so here's the thing. Let's go back on the way I responded to Rochelle saying, homie, I'm in a serious relationship. Let's dissect my response for a second. I said, I know. I enjoy pushing myself to say ludicrous things. I welcome you to not take them literally. You are cool, though. That is real. Now, let's compare and contrast that with the typical male response to getting his dick hurt. Let's have a look at this guy. This is a guy that, it's a story that I found online this week, and it isn't, his response to a woman telling him to go fuck himself is not uncommon, and I want us to explain why men do this, because it's puzzling. So this is the headline. Sydney man Thomas McGurk speaks out and says he's deeply sorry for vile Tinder messages. Now this is an article from the 2nd of October, which was 6 days ago. So what was that, like Wednesday or something? So this is the story. The Sydney man who sent multiple women disgusting messages when they rejected his advances has spoken out about the shocking incident that went viral and cost him his job and reputation. On Friday, Ebony Sanderson shared audio messages she received from a man named Tom, in which he could be heard calling her a disgusting fat pig after she said she declined to meet him for sex. Her post was shared by well-known feminist Clementine Ford and Nadia Bacody, and it quickly went viral. By Saturday, 28-year-old Thomas McGurk was identified by his employer and subsequently sacked. Now, the software engineer from Bondi in Sydney eastern suburbs has spoken exclusively, as he wanted to apologise to the women involved, as he recognised his behaviour was wrong. I didn't mean the things I said. I was acting out in an impulsive way because I was hurt, and I do recognise that, Mr. McGurk said. It was absolutely inappropriate behaviour, and I'm really disappointed in myself. So, you're now asking yourself, what exactly did this dude say? Well, the article continues. He could be heard in the clips saying, you are actually a fat fucking pig. You know that? Thanks. You're fucking ugly. Your ass looks okay. And you would have been one fuck. You would have been just one fuck because you're a disgusting fat pig. Now, here's the thing. Now, that is quite graphic. And I don't think the word disgusting is inappropriate for that, to be honest. But it's not necessarily uncommon. Granted, not all men are necessarily going to plummet to those depths, but men, when they get their dick hurt, they do generally turn into bell ends, don't they? And when you compare and contrast that to my Shakespearean prose, I think that's more points for CK, isn't it? And I do remember thinking, like, I wonder, because me and Rochelle have spoken on the phone before, and she always gets dudes sliding into her DMs, apparently. So I wonder how mine ranks compared to her others. Because I knew that she was with a dude, which is why I was happy. Look, here's the thing, guys, right? Can we just agree that me saying to her, what did I say again? Are you going to be my girlfriend or not? Can we both agree that that was said in jest? The reason you can understand that was said in jest is twofold. One, she lives in America. Like, what exactly was I expecting? And two, what kind of a pathetic grown man says, are you going to be my girlfriend? It was said in jest, but I was happy for her to know that I think she's cool. But I wasn't expecting anything beyond just me trying to terminate the chat and get on with my day, right? In a nice, funny, lighthearted way. So I'm fascinated with where my response ranks vis-a-vis other men sliding into her DMs who perhaps do have more direct intentions to get their end away. Now, I might have an impressive appendage, but it certainly cannot extend across the Atlantic. All right? So that's probably the third reason that you should know that it was said mostly in jest, because, you know, my cock doesn't expand across oceans. So I'd be fascinated to know how my response measures up compared to dudes. Certainly I'm winning more brownie points than this Sydney Thomas McGurk guy. Jesus, that guy really hit his dick really hurt. I really love that term, by the way. Dick hurt. I love it. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but dick hurt is basically when a guy's like rejected and he's angry and he's raged. Dick hurt. I love it. It's cool. Is there a female equivalent to dick hurt, though? I don't know, because I actually did Google this and it didn't give me any equivalent to dick hurt for women. So, of course, I invented my own. I've got three that I'd like to share with you. I've got having your boob bruised, which is relatively shit. Then I've got having your tit hit. Tit hit. No, I'm not sure about that. Or getting a vagina shiner. If you're a non-Brit, shiner is another word for a black eye. All right. So vagina shiner. I enjoy that one, actually. I don't know if you can come up with a better version or a better equivalent or a better alternative to dick hurt for women, but for now, we're going to go with vagina shiner. Hashtag on that, please, when you're going to tweet me. But no, I don't think there is a female equivalent to having your dick hurt. Like, you know, women sliding into a man's DM, telling him that they want some sexy time, him saying no thanks. You never hear news reports of women saying, fuck you, I don't want anything to do with you anyway. I bet your cock smells. You don't ever hear that. And there's a good reason you never hear those stories. And you know what that is? Because men don't say no. I would be fascinated for a study by the UN. I don't know why the UN would be. I don't know why the UN would be. Would be authorising a study into how many men say no to sexual advances. I've got no idea. But someone needs to do that study, because I'd be fascinated to compare and contrast how many men are hit up by women versus how many say, no. I mean, it almost never happens. But seriously, do you know of any woman that has been rejected by a dude and kicked off and had a vagina shiner? Do you know any woman that has taken rejection poorly after sliding into a dude's DMs? He doesn't have to be famous, dude. It can just be regular Joe blog, right? He rejected your mate's advances, your female friend's advances were rebuffed, and she did not take it well. Do you know any such anecdotes? Now, obviously you don't, because we don't say no. So that is an entirely rhetorical question. But I'm holding out some hope. I'm holding out some hope that it has happened at some point. But we both know that it hasn't. Let me share with you One of the last things I want to talk about, it's going to be a shorter episode this week, by the way. We're going back to the good old days of like sub 50 minute episodes. I've got a comment under I released a documentary. Was it this year or last year? Waiting with a Killer. Visit waitingwithakiller.com. And this guy's written... What's this guy written? I don't know. Okay, so this came 2 days ago. This is bad. The first 5 minutes is the vlogger massaging his own ego, thinking he's someone. The rest is just grasping at straws at best. He basically exploits the mental illness of a vulnerable guy. Don't waste your time watching. Do you know what I'm most proud of with that one? It's like, usually, in fact, never mind usually, always when I get messages of that ilk, I can start feeling like my heart racing a little bit, because it's not ideal, you know, and not racing with anger, just racing with discomfort. It's just odd when someone, you know, when you put something out there and someone just ultimately takes a massive shit on it. It's not ideal. But in this instance, this was the first time there was literally no escalation in my heart rate, or there was literally no feelings whatsoever, which makes me think two things. One, I'm getting to the point now when I'm just entirely comfortable with this, and like I'm at the place where it's, of course, not everybody's going to like it, which I've been at that place for ages anyway, but I would argue I'm probably just getting better at it, and I'm becoming more cognizant of the fact that he doesn't have to like it. That's his right. Good on you, dude. It means either that, or I'm getting perilously close to psychopathy. I just don't give a shit about anything anymore. And that is equally plausible, by the way. Because another recurring theme is I very rarely give a shit about most things, to be fair. And I think my art was probably the last bastion, but the fact that even now that is like, yeah, whatever. I don't know. But, yeah. And all those comments, good, bad, and indifferent, I always leave them up. I never reply, and I don't even reply to the positive ones, actually. But no, I'm, you know what, if my name wasn't on that doc and I wasn't in it, I can't say that I wouldn't think it was dog meat. It's hard to separate what you think has merit when you're the one that did it. I would also argue, is there merit to his observation that I am exploiting mental illness and a vulnerable guy? I didn't even consider, and this, to be fair, speaks to my naivety, because I don't think I'm the most worldly guy in the world, to be honest with you. And after I released that documentary, some people said, do you think he might have had some mental difficulties? And I didn't even think of it at the time. But bear in mind that I produce content all the time that's based on my interaction with random people, and I never think whether someone's mentally vulnerable or not. It's just a human I'm talking to, and this was exactly the same. In retrospect, maybe the signs were there. I don't know if he has mental illness. A lot of people have said he's clearly on meth. Is it meth or something? And I don't know. I'd be fascinated to hear your interpretation. If you haven't watched my documentary, it was filmed in San Diego last year, and I was at a bus stop. A guy came over. We just started talking. His story was remarkable. I started filming our talks. I often vlog anyway. He was more than happy for me to do that. And then he told me that when he was at school, I think he said he was 11 or 12, he killed the guy that was bullying him. That's his story. And it's on my website, or type in waitingwithakiller.com. It's there, it's free, it's 35 minutes. Let me know your thoughts on all of the above, because I'm fascinated to hear it. Okay, now let's return to the Louis Theroux documentary, A Place for Paedophiles. Let's see what happens later on in the episode when Dr. D'Orazio is asked to come and meet the inmate, the convicted sex offender, who moments earlier, aired his discontent and disrespect for the psychologist, and he wants to apologize to her. So what she says is so subtle in its cleverness. I remember watching it thinking, hang on a minute, Did she just tell him to fuck himself in the most ingenious way known to man? I'm going to play the clip for you now, then I'll come back, we'll chat, then I'll play it again. And I'm fascinated. So this is what she says during the apology.
And I just want to clarify for you in case, I want to clarify for you in case you have any concern in your mind or any worry about this. I am okay with myself and I don't feel less than, or I don't feel upset about the situation that occurred. If anything, it's given me more empathy towards you and more awareness. And I do not allow myself to be victimized by you in that sense. So I will not be carrying that with me. So know that I'm okay with it.
So there's a certain genius in what she just said, because she opened by saying, just in case you have any concerns or you're worried about what you said to me. So when you lead with that as a sentence, it's almost as though she's saying, okay, I don't want you to worry about this moving forward. So if you're worried or concerned, so she's framed it in a way that she's wanting to do him a favor and she wants to lessen the burden. But what she says later on is that basically, I won't be carrying around with me what you said. And then what she's doing, and this is just my analysis, right? What I think she did by saying, I won't be carrying that around with me. I think she's so clever, so bright, so trained in psychology that she understands the only reason that he did that earlier on and said, like, why are you in this room? Why are you talking to me? The only reason he did that, she understands that he wants her to be walking around with the shadow of feeling less than. She knows that that's how he gets off. He probably went and had a wank later on, thinking he got one over on her. But by her saying, I'm not carrying that around with me, is going to be deeply, deeply, deeply annoying to him, because that's exactly what he wanted. Now, I don't know if you're thinking, yeah, obviously that's obvious, but I didn't. It was just so subtle in the way that she framed it by saying, just in case you're worried or concerned. But actually, she doesn't give a fuck about his worry or his concern. She just wants him to know, I'm not carrying your shit around. So go and find something else to wank about. Right, I'm going to play that once again so we can listen to it in its full magnificence. Shit, I've got to go back in 15-second increments on this. God, I hate you, Netflix. Let's have a peekaboo.
Form of abuse. And I just want to clarify for you in case, I want to clarify for you in case you have any concern in your mind or any worry about this.
If you have any concern or worry.
I am okay with myself and I don't feel less than, or I don't feel upset about the situation that occurred. If anything, it's given me more empathy towards you and more...
Empathy. She's got no fucking empathy for this guy. She's an absolute genius. She's like a ninja.
Awareness, and I do not allow myself to be victimized by you in that sense, so I will not be carrying that with me. So know that I'm okay with it.
So go buy some porn and take the pictures of me off yourself, prick. I don't know. That is my analysis of that. And I don't know how obvious that was, but I just thought it was quite subtle. And I love the way she phrased it. I love the way she framed it. I thought it was genius. I think there's something for us all to use in there. We can just, you know, it was, I don't know. You know, I'm a massive fan of psychology. You know, I'm a massive fan of phrasing and words, and that did it for me. She's hot anyway, but that's not the point. Why is he with me in psychologists? Actually, I'm going to put that into the universe, because I'm a massive believer in that you can bring things into reality just by, I don't know, what is it? What's it called? Why do the most profound things always have shit words? I don't like the term manifesting because it just sounds shit. But that is technically what I'm talking about here. So if I said, right, my next girlfriend's going to be a psychologist. I mean, so far, the evidence would suggest to the contrary. As I've been told to go and eat shit by Rochelle. But yes, I'm going to put it into the universe. My next girlfriend's going to be a psychologist. I guarantee you that is the case. Oh, shit. I just said, oh, shit, because now I've just said it has to be. Otherwise, I'll be annoyed and my ego won't allow it not to be. I'm going to say it. Yes, my next girlfriend will be a psychologist. It's been said. Let's put a timestamp on this. It has been said It is now actually Friday, the 9th of October, 5 minutes past midnight on the, 9th of October, 5 minutes past midnight. C.K. Golding has said that his next girlfriend will be a psychologist, and we will come back to this episode when it turns out to be the case. And I'm going to woo her. I'm going to woo her with my charm, my wisdom, my fearlessness, my disinterest about rejection, and most critically of all, my giant Atlantic crossing cock.